And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table with the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. This week on the show, you may realize if you look at the old calendar on the wall that we're coming up on Halloween. So we're going to talk a little bit about some Halloween culture that we enjoy. We're also going to look at some of the things that we have in the past talked about liking and try to figure out where we go from there. We're calling that segment, If You Like. And then, of course, at the end of the show, as we always do, we will talk about what is making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's meet everybody. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I'm a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I work on movies coverage at the NPR website, and I sit here week after week watching as Mike Katzif flinches when you say the word kicky.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Well, I'm awfully glad to see everybody around the table once again.
Well, it is a pleasure to be here. And Linda, before we go any further, I need to unveil something.
That's never good.
Those of you who can't see us should understand that there's prop comedy about to happen.
Yeah, I got a prop. No, if you recall, those of you who remember sort of the Pop Culture Happy Hour deep cuts dating back 1 year, for our Halloween episode, we talked about our pop culture fears.
I know where this is going.
And if you remember, and of course you don't, because people are on this table barely remember, Linda Holmes talked about her pop culture fear. And Linda, I have in my hand a bag that I would like you to open. It is from one of our more deranged fans.
Is it your mother?
Your mother?
It is my mother.
It is your mother. Oh, God, I know what this is. It's going to break.
Now, Linda is apparently, for some very confusing reason, terrified of the little golden book, Babes in Toyland. And what we're trying to do is figure out what image from Babes in Toyland scared her so.
Right, that's
so
the,
at some
that's
point,
the backstory, is that she remembered
point,
that she was terrified, but she couldn't remember why.
I will definitely look through it and figure out what the story is. We can't do it right now.
No, page by page.
No, I'll get too upset and flustered, and I won't be able to go on with the show. Gosh, I do appreciate the gift. I appreciate the gift of fear, as we all should. And I thank Maggie, as always, for making me terrified. Maggie's brought so many terrifying things into my life.
Oh,
why should she stop now? At any rate, so it's Halloween. Stephen, since you have already kicked off our show, why don't you tell us a little bit about something that you like in the era of, let's say, Halloween television. I have a few guesses what Halloween television you might like, but I'm going to throw it over to you just in case you throw me a gigantic curveball.
Yeah, I'm not going to throw you a gigantic curveball. At one point, we were talking about, just simply talking about, what is your favorite Simpsons Halloween special?
Yeah.
That is how deeply ingrained they are within the realm of television Halloween. So I want to talk about my favorite episode of the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror series, namely season 4, Treehouse of Horror 3, mm-hmm. In which Bart and Homer acquire an evil talking Krusty doll.
Sure.
Bart and Lisa inadvertently summon zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And the King Kong parody in which Homer is the giant ape.
Right.
I tend not to be one of those people who goes completely all out, you know, with regard to Halloween. It mostly involves eating the kids' candy after they go to sleep.
Sure.
But the Simpsons Halloween episodes, particularly in the really, really juicy stretch of kind of the first third of that show's 23-year run or whatever, the Halloween episodes have become pretty super deeply ingrained in terms of the vocabulary of our lives. And the clip I brought is where Homer is in a bazaar and finds himself dickering at the House of Evil.
Do you sell toys?
We sell forbidden objects from places men fear to tread. We also sell frozen yogurt, which I call Frogurt.
Well, I need something for my son's birthday.
Ah, perhaps this will please the gentleman. Take this object, but beware, it carries a terrible curse.
Ooh, that's bad.
But it comes with a free Frogurt.
That's good.
The Frogurt is also cursed.
That's bad.
But you get your choice of topping.
That's good.
The toppings contain potassium benzoate. That's bad.
Among other things, it is also the episode that spawned one of my favorite toys, which is an actual talking Krusty doll that you can set to evil.
Oh, nice.
I'm partial to the Kang and Kodos.
The election episode?
The cameos. The election episode, certainly, where we are.
Which has maybe the best punchline of any episode of The Simpsons.
For example?
The don't blame me, I voted for Kodos.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah. And also, twirling, twirling, twirling toward freedom. I don't think we have a clip of that. But,
abortions for all.
That's right. It's going to just degenerate into a quote fest. I am also fond of the episode where they go to Mr. Burns' mansion in Pennsylvania, which is a parody of the Bram Stoker Dracula. And also, more recently, the Monty Mort and Slithers episode, or the Harry Potter mm-hmm. parody, where there's a scene where Slithers eats Monty Mort's corpse while crying, which is a psychosexual feast of nastiness that you just don't forget as easily as you want to.
Well, that's, I mean, you do bring up an interesting sort of point about The Simpsons, which is that I think for Simpsons nerds like us, there's kind of a tipping point where you stopped obsessively watching right. each episode over and over and over again. And there's a stretch of episodes where you maybe remember watching them with a certain amount of kind of disappointment because they weren't just the greatest thing you ever saw in your life. But if you pound down these later seasons, your expectations are bound to be lowered by mainlining 10, 15 episodes at a course. They're still really, really funny.
Sure.
It's a funny show. That show didn't get terrible. It got less consistently amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I agree. It was interesting to hear early Homer voice in that clip. Mm-hmm. That sort of more mush mouth, more little, Walter Matthau-y.
It's a little more like this.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And also, I think the classic was, I think in the very first Treehouse of Horror, the Raven
yes.
episode where they kind of read Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven.
Yeah, as you can see, Trey and I are sitting okay. here quietly
yeah,
while
I
Glenn
have nothing
and Steven
to contribute to this conversation because
horror.
The only episode of The Simpsons that I have watched from start to finish is the Streetcar Named Desire parody.
Which is fantastic. Yeah.
Of course it is. Of
course it is. That is, Trey, there are just times when I just think.
Shocked I am.
Yeah. But, right. But I'm a little bit, I have to say, I'm a little bit goggle-eyed by you've only seen one episode in its entirety.
Yeah.
Let's bring something in that we all can gather around and feel a certain communal sense of love and ambivalence towards.
This triggers no ambivalence whatsoever for me. This triggers only joy. A slightly okay. winsome joy.
Sure. That, of course, is the Vince Guaraldi theme, Linus and Lucy, which is the theme to It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, from 1966's It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
Of the good, you know, that theme. What's going to be wrong with that theme? The thing that you also remember from this show is the punchline.
Gee, I got a candy bar.
Boy, I got three cookies.
Hey, I got a package of gum.
I got a rock.
The joke of that is a really good insight into the grim existential hellscape that Schultz was creating.
Absolutely.
The joke is you see a kid who has had a bad Halloween costume and you give it a rock. Mm-hmm. A toddler, you give
yeah.
a rock. That's
yeah.
that's the joke.
Yeah.
The other thing that you just referred to the kid as it. So you were clearly in the same boat as the cruel, cruel public.
That's true. And also, I want to give points here to Christopher Shea, who played Linus. The only one of these kids, can we agree, let's remove the gauzy scrim of nostalgia from the show. And look, really, the only one of these kids was actually acting. The rest of the kids were kind of reading
reciting.
Phonetically. Yes, yeah. yes. So this kid, if we have
I
a clip
only
of him,
want what is mine. Yeah.
Well, here's a good example of the level of thespianism that is going on.
Do I get to go trick-or-treating this year, big brother?
Sure, Sally.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. How do we do it?
All you have to do is walk up to a house, ring the doorbell, and say tricks or treats.
Are you sure it's legal?
Of course it's legal.
I want one to be accused of taking part in a rumble.
First of all, tricks or treats? You don't go up to a treats. Door and say tricks or treats. That's weird.
Well, it was the 60s.
Yeah.
It was a different time.
It was a different time. A more psychedelic time when our tricks were treats. And also, you know, so you got little Sally there being adorable, but reading from everyone.
Well, okay, but let me say this. Let me say this about attempting to rescue It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, from Glenn's ocean of disdain which he has cast it. Look, the thing that I like about The Great Pumpkin, the thing I like about the idea of The Great Pumpkin, is that to me, one of the things that made Peanuts so great is that in the same way as Calvin and Hobbes, there were these ideas that just sort of were, and they didn't make any sense, and it didn't make any sense that that would be something that would come into a kid's head, but it was a thing that a kid believed.
Each year, the great pumpkin rises out of the pumpkin patch that he thinks is the most sincere. He's got to pick this one. He's got to. I don't see how a pumpkin patch can be more sincere than this one. You can look all around, and there's not a sign of hypocrisy. Nothing but sincerity as far as the eye can see.
The same way that Calvin had certain things that he believed, Linus had this idea that at Halloween, the Great Pumpkin would come, which is such a weird, weird idea.
And he would only show himself to the sincere.
Yeah, the metric was sincerity, which is a word that not a lot of third grade just toss around.
Exactly, and so it's this...
Also a word that I think makes Glenn Weldon deeply uncomfortable.
That's why you don't like it. That's why you don't like it. You're afraid you'll never see the Great Pumpkin because you lack sincerity.
Okay. Sort of the way the Charlie Brown Christmas is sort of about this larger statement about, you know,
about
belief and commercialism. Mm-hmm. You know, the Great Pumpkin is also sort of about having youthful dreams dashed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's worth remembering that the Great Pumpkin, spoiler, doesn't actually show up. Right?
What?
Well,
I've
always liked the fact that in this kind of situation, there would just be these, the same way that Lucy wanted to sit behind the psych, that's crazy. It's so goofy. And I like the fact that it's so kind of inventive and strange. And to me, The Great Pumpkin is one of those weird, inventive Charles Schulz things where it absolutely doesn't make any sense, but you buy it anyway.
But the animation is lousy. Let's agree. Can we agree? The animation's pretty lousy. And that one interminable scene with Snoopy behind enemy lines sneaking through the French countryside, that lasts for 10 minutes.
I feel like that's a padded... their conceit does not hold up a half hour.
All right, fine. Now that we're done picking on Peanuts, Trey, did you bring us any Halloween TV?
I did, as a matter of fact. I don't know whether anyone will recognize it. You might from one voice, probably not from the other. But when I tell you what it is, it will come as no surprise that this is my choice.
Oh, my! What a delectable medley of fromage and splendor. You must try one. Cheesy. Yes. Cheesy. Le mot juste. Must be glorious to have such a happy knack for clarity and concision.
Yep. So who are you supposed to be?
Chingachgook. I'm the last of the Mohicans.
Oh. Wow. A little mystery solved.
That's a solid joke.
Yeah.
Okay, that's...
That is from 1997, third episode, fifth season of Frasier.
Right.
With John Mahoney as Frasier's dad, who gets in the good line about the propagation of the species, and the delightful Edward Hibbert as Gil Chesterton, the guy who hosted the food show on Frasier's radio station. This is the one with the costume party that Niles has thrown as a charity fundraiser.
Wait, are you telling me they had a disastrous fancy party?
They had a disastrous fancy party on an episode of Frasier. And what I like about this is it's one of the best episodes that's built in that sort of classic farcical structure with a cascade of misunderstandings that just leads to...
You don't say.
...mortifying embarrassments for all concerned.
I've heard there was an episode of Three's Company once where someone overheard something and thought that it was something else.
Right, and thought that it was something else, yes.
Oh, that's a good choice. I like Frasier.
Good old Frasier.
I enjoy, and I will say, if you're going to pick an episode of Frasier, you got to go with the fancy party gone horribly wrong.
You kind
of
do.
That's the Frasier structure. Well, mine, I realized as I started to look for an episode that I am not a Halloween episode person. I don't particularly like most plots that revolve around people in costume. I kept coming up with ideas of costume party episodes that then I remembered were not from Halloween, which really annoyed me because I kept thinking, oh, there was that Big Bang Theory where they won the costume contest as the Justice League, and it was kind of funny, and they were trading off the Wonder Woman costume. But of course, that was New Year's Eve, naturally, because that's when you go to a costume party. Anyway, I did eventually come up with a Halloween episode. This clip takes place by the side of the road just after a very unfortunate event, which I will explain to you after you hear it.
Sam, I'm really sorry. Please, come on. Let's give you a ride home, okay?
Kid, it's not your sister's fault. didn't even know it was you.
Look, she's really, really upset, kid. I swear to God.
It's true, Sam. I swear to God. Sam! Sam! God!
Hey, is it just me or did he seem upset?
This is a classic, incredibly heartbreakingly sad episode of Freaks and Geeks. It is the third ever episode of Freaks and Geeks. You have in this family the young kid who is among the geeks, and he hangs out with the sort of younger nerds, and his older sister is trying to get in with this crowd of sort of stoners, and including several people who appear in that clip. Seth Rogen is in that clip. James Franco yep. is in that clip. Jason Segel is in that clip. Mm-hmm. Those are her friends who are in the car sort of saying, kid, it's not your sister's fault. Because what has happened is the kid was out trick-or-treating with his friends dressed like a robot, and his sister was driving around doing pranks with her friends, and she egged him without realizing it was him. And what makes this heartbreaking is that the brother and the sister here really genuinely love each other. She tries to be good to him. And so for her to humiliate him in this way out on the street when he's with his friends and everything is really this truly terrible moment. And this episode is very Freaks and Geeks in that it's sort of love expressed through terrible things happening to you.
Right.
Because the way that you get how much they love each other and how close they are is how incredibly pained he is and how incredibly pained she is and how ashamed she is that she's done this horrible thing. And then she goes home and there's a very nice other storyline going on where her mother is very upset because the daughter didn't want to join her in handing out candy together, which they've done for a long time. Mm-hmm. The daughter wants to go out and be an idiot with her friends. So eventually the daughter comes home and the mother and the daughter have a sort of one of those not entirely satisfying reconciliations where the daughter puts a costume on and goes along with it. But you sense that the daughter and the mother are still kind of drifting. And it's very, very bittersweet, this entire episode. And that business with the egging of the kid is just... It's just wrenching. It's just wrenching.
Happy Halloween, everybody!
I, like I said, I'm not a sort of cute costume party.
Another sitcom, since you know we've all chosen sort of, well, Freaks and Geeks isn't a sitcom,
no.
but you know that we've largely chosen TV comedies to express our favorite Halloween memories. That Roseanne,
yeah,
every season with great relish,
they did
would do a sort of spectacular Halloween episode that was taken much more seriously than any given holiday episode. That they had sort of identified that for this family, Halloween is the big holiday.
Right, absolutely. It's their big family holiday like Christmas is for other people.
And it's part of what makes that show really, really yeah. resonate with me.
Those are definitely worth looking up. So.
I got three quick hits, which then this amounts to a regrettable Halloween pop quiz.
Okay.
So let's set it up. The first one, I'll just give you one hint.
Okay.
Prequel.
How many times have I said and said? How many times have I said in my head? What am I doing here? Why am I the slave of this grinchy old crock? And I say how I wish I could turn back the clock and have the fine future I had once before and again be an innocent puppy once more.
I forgot about this. This is that Grinch prequel.
This is Halloween is Grinch Night. Just a 1977's attempt to cash in on the Grinchomania that was sweeping the country. Cynical.
You just kind of blamed the year.
Yeah, I know. It was. Everybody was in the throes of Grinchomania.
Nice.
Has nothing to do with Halloween, so they have to make it have something to do with Halloween by calling it Halloween is Grinch Night. Not
sure.
Defensive at all.
Sure.
You'll understand this, Stephen. Instead of Chuck Jones, as we got originally in the How the Grinch Stole Christmas, we get Fritz Freleng. Okay, still Looney Tunes, but latter-day Looney Tunes.
Right.
You know, 70s special Looney Tunes. Uh-huh. When Bugs Bunny, let's be fair, it happens to all of us, gained a little weight. Remember how in those ones he had a little bit more? Instead of Boris Karloff, who in his defense was off being dead,
right.
They
right.
had Hans Conried. You heard?
Yeah.
Now I love
Hans.
I am not going to say a bad word about Hans Conried. Hans Conried is my homeboy. Not going to say anything bad about him, but he's not Boris Karloff.
Not Boris Karloff.
Yeah. The worst. Do you have any guesses who it is who's singing that song?
No.
That is Max, the dog, singing that song.
Oh, sure. That makes sense.
This is the problem. We don't give Max a ballad. We don't give Max an emotive ballad.
I think don't give Max a ballad is just a great rule to live
his
by.
His whole thing is he doesn't say anything. He's a dog. His whole thing.
And all right.
Moving on. Next one. What is the hint here? Wrong-headed.
Scarecrows and flappers are always together. Spiders spin cobwebs in overcast weather. Cauldrons are brewing and banshees are doing a weird and ghastly routine to wish you a merry creepy Halloween.
I've got a first appreciation for the Halloween waltz, though.
Yeah. It's kind of more of a dirge, actually.
If you wish Halloween were more plotting.
Right, well, what is it?
This is Halloween with the new Addams Family, 1977.
Oh.
This was, you know, now everybody was looking good. Of course, they had a different grandmama, and they had to get a new Pugsley and a new Wednesday. But everybody else came back. It was in color. Everybody had 70s haircuts. It looked really bad. Mm-hmm. It's all available on YouTube. Don't look it up. It's terrible. But that's what that is. And the final one.
Yes. I can see him clearly through the fog.
Oh, boy!
Oh, Master, I forgot to open the window. Forgive me, it will never happen again.
And I know how to make sure it never happens again. And as for all of you, I have called you here tonight to warn you. You have exploited your monsterhood so much that you are no longer scary. People are laughing at you instead of shrieking. And now, someone has started the rumor that there is to be no more Halloween.
All right. That is 1979's The Halloween That Almost Wasn't, starring Judd Hirsch as Dracula. Marriott Hartley. Remember Marriott Hartley?
Uh-huh.
Marriott Hartley is Winnie the Witch. Henry Gibson is Igor, who was also, by the way, the voice of Max. Henry Gibson from Life End.
Nice.
John Chuck. Huh? John Chuck. Everybody remember John Chuck? Nobody's
no.
looking at me.
No.
Blankly.
Got nothing.
As Frankenstein Monster. So the plot here is that Winnie the Witch has leaked to the press that there will be no more Halloween unless her demands for equal recognition with Dracula are met.
Oh, I see. So it's like a women's lib.
Women's libbers. Am I right, Ben? Am I right? You know what I'm saying? So your question to me is, yes, Glenn, fine, but does it end, as all Halloween specials must and should, with a disco party? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Dracula removes his cloak and puts out the white suit, and Judd Hirsch has a little disco dancing thing.
It's
kind of awesome.
I love it.
Yep,
I love it. Thank you, Glenn. Thanks for participating in our Glenn's Regrettable Halloween Pop Quiz, which I very much enjoyed. Our next segment, we're going to talk a little bit. You know, we all have things that we tend to return to over and over and over again. And we were thinking, you know, it would be nice if we could say, in addition to this thing I always, always, always recommend, if you want more, then maybe we could try to expand on that recommendation and say, if you like this, you might also like these other things. So, Glenn Weldon, let's start with you. What did you bring?
I've often recommended, not necessarily in this podcast, but to many people, a series of children's books called Captain Underpants by Dave Pilkey.
Sure.
Great.
Yes.
They're a really great series of books that kind of put the superhero mythos into an elementary school environment. They're very funny. That's the thing about them. If you're looking for some comics that you might be able to get kids into, to kind of get them into the superhero thing, that don't have the things that a lot of superhero books have nowadays, like, you know, disemboweling.
Uh-huh. And boob windows.
And decapitation and flensing and, yes, and creepy sexist leering and dense first-person narrative, which is kind of crushing every superhero book right now. And I'm going to recommend some all-ages books. So kids will like them. But because they have things like fun and whimsy in them, I think everybody else might like them too. If you want to read about little girl protagonists, a great book by Jimmy Robinson called The Adventures of Evil and Malice. They're the twin daughters of a supervillain and a superhero, and they try to help out their dad.
Sure.
What age group are you thinking?
I'm thinking anywhere from 8 up, really, for some of these books.
Right.
There's a book called Supergirl, Cosmic Adventures in the Eighth Grade by Landry Walker and Eric Jones. A lot of fun. And there's a web comic for a little bit older girls called Superhero Girl. You can find at superherogirlsadventures.blogspot.com, which is by Faith Aaron Hicks, which is a lot of fun. They've just wrapped up their first chapter. Real quick, for boys, there's a series called G-Man by Chris Giarrusso. He also does mini Marvels, which is like junior versions of the Marvel superheroes. There's Tiny Titans, a book that's by Art Balthazar and Frank Aurel Yanni, which is, I couldn't figure out who this book was for, because it's taking all these DC characters, some of whom are evil and do all that disemboweling, and they kind of put them into this book. So who is this book really for? It's just a lot of fun. It's very simple, and all that backstory is not a part of it. It's a lot of fun. The last one I want to talk to is a webcomic called Butterfly. This is what would happen if a sidekick had a sidekick. So the idea here is that Batman and Robin, well, not Batman and Robin, because that would cause some litigation.
Yeah.
It's Nightbat and Birdie, who are original creations, like Ricky Rouse and Monald Muck, have a sidekick. This little Robin character has a sidekick called Butterfly. It's a lot of fun. It's at 10centticker.com/butterfly.htm, or just look for Dean Tripp, who runs Project Rooftop, a site that I contribute to. I just want to say that, but it's a lot of fun, this book.
Very good. Excellent set of recommendations. Yeah. Trey Graham.
All right. Well, a lot of affection has been expressed on this podcast for Downton Abbey.
Oh, yes.
Yes? Correct. We're a fan of Downton Abbey.
Woohoo! And we're in no spoilers.
So, and no spoilers. Because there's a second season coming up, and oh my goodness, I just got an invitation to the press event today.
Nice.
A place to wear your bustle.
Exactly. and it's been a while.
And your top hat.
So
that'll make you
like,
quite a sight.
If you like Downton Abbey, I'm here to recommend that you try Mrs. Brown, the movie, if you haven't seen that. It gives us Judi Dench at her flintiest as a latter-day Queen Elizabeth, still deep in mourning 3 years since her husband died. It has all of the elements that made Downton Abbey so fantastic. Corsets, repression, rigid protocols that can be manipulated to express complicated interior conversations despite the exchange of very few words.
Daffy ants with large hats.
Daffy ants with large hats.
Yes.
You know, it's a fantastically detailed film. I watched a bit of it again just to refresh my memory of the tone and the specifics. And there are lovely little touches. The way the actress playing a lady-in-waiting keeps her eyes just locked on the queen. The dumbstruck silence that falls when the Billy Connolly character breaks the order of seating, the order of precedence at the upper servant's table. And there's this fantastically prim seaside bathing sequence about 25 minutes in.
Oh, God.
It's so wonderfully archaic.
You are not selling this.
I really am. And moving on from there, but still on the Judi Dench tip, and with a
but
bonus.
But does it have seaside bathing?
In fact, on the Judi Dench tip, with a bonus, speaking of dotty ants and hats, of Maggie
bonus.
Smith. Mm-hmm. There is a film called Ladies in Lavender, which is about two elderly sisters who take in a castaway. Handsome young castaway who washes up on a beach in Cornwall. And let's just say he changes their lives and it kind of upsets their world.
To be fair, Trey, if I were to parody this genre, I would call it Ladies in Lavender.
It's true. It's a delightful movie. It's really, really sweet. And I'm gonna throw in...
Trey takes a lot of abuse.
It's true.
The thing is, Trey's taking all this abuse, but I'm sorry, I've been to our Facebook page.
I take it happily.
These are the recommendations that everyone is going to freak out.
It's true.
I am going to, for the purposes of a curveball, I'm going to throw in a surprise Gwyneth. I am here to declare my fondness for Doug McGrath's Emma.
Oh, yes.
The Jane Austen
adaptation. Well, I like
adaptation.
That movie a lot. I like that
one
movie quite a lot.
One of her earlier, if not her first big film. And it was before it was fashionable to hate on Gwyneth, and I thought she was charming and fresh, and I really like the movie. It's a stylish movie.
I love Jeremy Northam in that movie. Mm. There are many things I like a whole lot about that movie. I fully, fully agree with you about that.
Yay.
Excellent choices, Trey Graham. All right, Stephen Thompson, now we're going to make fun of you.
All right. I was trying to focus on music to kind of change things up a little
See,
bit.
See, I was afraid this was going to be, if you like the Packers, then you might want to consider...
The Badgers.
The Bears.
If you like my Zaxxon machine.
The Bears.
Glenn had sent around an email like, if you love my Zaxxon machine, you love the Tempest machine I'm thinking about buying on Craigslist. So I decided not to go that route. There's a band called Beirut. Which a lot of people go on and on endlessly about, which features a young Brooklyn-based dreamboat named Zach Condon.
I do like a dreamboat.
Well, a lot of people who listen to this podcast might be big fans of Beirut. If you like Beirut, for God's sake, dig up the albums by a band called Pine Top 7, which was doing a lot of the same things and getting absolutely no acknowledgement for it, except in the Onion AV Club about 10 years ago. Very, very, very good band. I'm sure you can find some of their stuff poking around on the web. That's one recommendation. Another, I have talked at great length on the show about how much I love various reality television shows, your Survivors, your Project Runways, your Top Chefs. Many of them have overseas equivalents, which you can stream on YouTube.
That's a great point.
And if you like Project Runway, or if, for example, you think this season of Project Runway is a little bit grim with a bunch of fairly unlikable people,
and it
Josh
is.
M.
Yeah, Eyebrows McGee.
Eyebrows McGee. You should check out Project Runway Canada and Project Runway Australia. And yeah. I know you certainly, I'm sure you can find them on your websites of ill repute, but they are streaming.
You can obtain them through methods.
but they are streaming in 10-minute pieces on YouTube, where you just hook your computer up to your TV, lickety-split.
And I should say that's how I watched America's Next Top Model, the UK.
Belgium.
There's also Britain's Missing Top Model.
Yeah, it had disabled women.
Right. Mm-hmm. There are lots of... There's also Project Catwalk, which is the...
That's the UK.
The UK
runway.
Version of Project Runway. If you geek out on those shows, and I will say, if you like these shows, tend not to pay tons and tons of attention to them, and need something to put on while you do something tedious, this is such a great way to
repair
go.
Repair your Zaxxon machine, for example.
For example, if you need to repair one's Zaxxon machine. It is a wonderful diversion, and you are very unlikely to have been spoiled. Finally, if you like Ryan Gosling, as so many people who listen to this podcast no doubt do, in the Halloween theme, Ryan Gosling, many of you might know, but a lot of you probably don't, that Ryan Gosling has been in a band called Dead Man's Bones, which is a really delightful Halloween-themed band that plays sort of spooky music.
And they play One Night a Year.
And they have an absolutely,
so dreamy. I can't
they have an
tell
absolutely wonderful song called "My Body's a Zombie for You." Among other things, Dead Man's Bones is very, very well aware that nothing is creepier than a children's choir. And so when they were going around touring a couple years ago, and I got to see them at the Sixth and I Synagogue, they brought in a creepy choir to sing along, and a silly variety show, and just very, very wonderful. If you don't know it, Dead Man's Bones, one of the stars of Dead Man's Bones is Ryan Gosling.
I am favor of the expansion of the Ryan Gosling brand. If by any chance you're out there and you've not yet looked up feminist Ryan Gosling... It is my favorite new Tumblr, in which every photo starts off with a completely fictional caption of Ryan Gosling saying, "Hey, girl," and then he goes on to say something really awesome about feminism. It's just really funny. It's completely made up, but it's so funny. Okay, so I have gone on at great length and had some success converting some people who listen to this podcast to Parks and Recreation on NBC, but I have pretty much even bored myself talking about it because I just can't talk about it anymore. So I have three recommendations jumping off of different aspects. The first one I'm going to talk about is if you like the government bureaucracy comedy, please make sure that you have seen In the Loop, which is a very profane... I don't have a clip for you because
there's not 20 seconds of the movie where
I don't have a clip because there's just too many F words. You just can't. There's nothing you can do about it. So In the Loop, another recommendation if you like this sort of workplace comedy, and this is probably the most similar in style, is Party Down, which we've also talked about before, which aired on Starz and is available on various, you know, streaming and DVD and stuff. And I have not actually seen all of that show myself, and I am very much looking forward to finishing it off because it is a terrifically funny show. And we talked earlier about Freaks and Geeks. There's some crossover in folks who have been on Freaks and Geeks and folks who have been on Party Down. So that's a good one. And then finally, if you like the small town humor aspect, I was recently reminded that the show Northern Exposure became very strange in its later years and squandered a lot of the early goodwill that it had accumulated. Mm-hmm. It made a lot of terrible mistakes as it aged. But the first couple few seasons of that show are genuinely fantastic. And there is a reason why David E. Kelley, who went on to do, has done so many weird, odd projects. He had this, you know, recent horrible failed Wonder Woman thing, but he also made Ally McBeal, which was annoying, and a bunch of other stuff. But Northern Exposure, the early seasons of Northern Exposure, if you like the kind of loving oddballs in a small town, you got to make sure you see this. And it's not as easy to get as some. It's not streaming on Netflix. It's not. You got to kind of go to the trouble to get the DVDs or track down someplace where they put it on in syndication. But you got to see it. And we're far enough removed now from that show running that there are a significant number of people who would really love that show who have never seen it, I'm convinced.
I always loved that show for John Cullum. He was
absolutely
he was just terrific.
Many great actors on
that
show.
Also say, speaking of David E. Kelley, that the first few seasons of Picket Fences, I think, are terrific.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's another show that kind of flew off the rails. It kind of has some of that David E. Kelley wackadoo.
I would 100% agree with you. The first few seasons of Picket Fences also are small town, you know, colorful characters. It's a little darker than Northern Exposure, but it's also a very fine show.
Sure, so. And for small town, colorful, oddball characters with murder and nightmares, Twin Peaks.
Absolutely true. That is absolutely true.
But Picket Fences has the added benefit of Five-ish Finkel.
It's true.
So we have front-loaded you with all kinds of recommendations. You couldn't get through everything we're recommending if you tried. So.
And we're not going to give anybody links, so no. No. You want links? No.
We're not going to help you. No, we are. We'll provide you with lots of help to find stuff that we are recommending. And that brings us to the final segment of our show that we love so much, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
The writer Colson Whitehead, I really like and admire. He's written John Henry Days, Sag Harbor, The Intuitionist. He's written a new novel called Zone One. Yes, it's a zombie novel. Yes, we've had plenty of zombie novels, but this is more than what you think it might be. It's not simply another iteration of the genre. It's not a, thank God, it's not a deconstruction of the genre.
Right.
It's not parody. It's not pastiche. What he does is he interrogates the genre and finds something new. And in this case, what he's found is brilliant writing. Imagine that. Imagine that.
Imagine a genre
piece with some wonderful, wonderful writing. There's been effective writing in this genre before, you know, that delivers the scares, but there hasn't been this kind of sustained, confident, beautiful sentence-by-sentence writing. I mean, you can read the excerpt on the NPR site. The verbs are doing all the work in all these sentences. It's just great writing. Now, I get sent, as a book critic, a lot of zombie novels.
Uh-huh.
And if I have to read another essay about the cultural metaphor of the zombies,
I'm
going to chew my own arm off. But Colson Whitehead has written, with Zone One, what I think should be and is the last zombie novel. Okay? No more. Stop it. If you're writing one at home now, stop. Put the pen down.
For you.
This is the best it's ever going
to
get.
Change it
Change it. Don't give it.
We gave them dancing skeletons with top hats.
Change it to skeletons with top hats.
It's the apotheosis. It's the end. This is the best it's ever going to get. So Zone One by Colson Whitehead. It's great.
Very good. All right. Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
Boob truck.
All right, and now Stephen Thompson.
I frankly cannot remember whether I actually mentioned this earlier on a podcast, because I certainly meant to. I just can't remember if I followed through. But I'm repeating myself because it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and there is a lovely artist named Jill Miller. I assume she's lovely. I haven't actually met her. But she launched a Kickstarter project at Kickstarter.com to fund the renovation of an ice cream truck to put a giant breast on the top of it.
I think you maybe talked about this when it was only an idea.
Yeah, so it came through. She got her funding. It has apparently happened. It is at the Pittsburgh Biennial at the Andy Warhol Museum. And the idea behind this thing is it's a mobile safe space for nursing mothers. So if you're getting harassed in a restaurant, if you need a nurse but you're in a public park, then the idea, you know, the principle behind it is that you would text the boob truck just like you would text a food truck. Right? You would follow the food truck on Twitter and see where it is. And you would go and find the nursing truck and you would get some support.
By which point your breasts are as hard as rocks. I'm sorry, we're across town.
Stephen,
can you wait an
Thompson,
hour?
Stephen Thompson, you're bringing me down here. It's as much a piece of performance art or installation art as it is, you know, a functional thing, of course. And as Glenn was just saying, it interrogates that space, that dividing line where we are confronted with things that some of us are not entirely comfortable with, and it sort of forces a conversation. And I like that a lot, which is why the other thing making me happy this week is the gigantic fuss over the film Anonymous. Not because I have any grudge against the film Anonymous, which I understand to be highly entertaining. This is the movie that posits an alternate explanation for the works of Shakespeare, right? It has the knickers of many a scholar in a twist, and there's a big public conversation going on about Shakespeare now, and I'm enjoying that. I'm kind of sad about the fact that many a librarian, high constituency, is going to be forced to help people understand, just as many an English teacher will, that yes, Shakespeare did in fact write Shakespeare, and that Roland Emmerich's theory, as the theory that this movie explains, is a just gigantic load of hokum that is believed by a tiny little fringe few in the world of Shakespeare scholarship.
I like the idea of choosing between, you know, just centuries of history, right, and the brain of Roland Emmerich.
You know, that guy Roland Emmerich might be onto something.
I can't decide which I'm going to choose.
Yeah, he's the Oliver Stone of Shakespeare's
scholarship. He really is. That's what's going on here. It's one of those things. It's a theory that's been beaten down so many times. And here it is going to be a major mainstream Hollywood entertainment.
But you're just happy to see people talking
about it. I'm just happy to hear people, you know, the New York Times rating, you know, 4-page pieces in the magazine about Shakespeare scholarship.
Outstanding. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
There are certainly elements of my personal life that are making me happy. For example, I finally cleaned my basement. Part of what is making me happy is no longer having to clean the basement. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Pop culture happy hour, not pop cultures happy hour. What did I just say? Cultures?
Got an early listen to an album coming out in January. You can sample the first song on the NPR Music website by a really, really wonderfully happy-making band called Not a Surf. Just album after album after album I find lovable. A band that radiates an enormous amount of kindness in these very uplifting anthems, just a very unabashedly, sort of fearlessly upbeat and happy-making band. The album is called The Stars Are Indifferent to Astronomy, which is just a fantastic title. There's a song called When I Was Young streaming on the NPR Music site. That album has sort of been in constant rotation. Particularly great band to listen to in the car. I highly recommend it. And the last thing making me happy is that not to bite on what I'm sure is making Linda happy, which is her upcoming vacation, mm-hmm. but I have suddenly scheduled my upcoming staycation, in which I will guard my solitude with by boarding up the windows and doors and brandishing a weapon.
But you'd like to be visited by all of our fans while you're...
Which is why you're sharing this with us.
Get off my lawn.
Outstanding. Very, very good. Okay, so yes, one thing making me happy is my upcoming vacation. I'm not going to lie. The biggest thing making me happy this week, and this will come as no surprise to anyone, was my crowdsourced happy music list, which I wrote about on the blog yesterday on Twitter. It's currently Tuesday, so this happened on Monday. I asked everybody to send me ideas for their favorite happy-making music, and I took a bunch of those recommendations and put them into a playlist, and it came out awesome. Awesome. And I listened to it all day yesterday, and I listened to it a bunch today, and it's incredibly great, and I can't let Trey listen to it because he's visually distracting.
It's true. There's a lot of bopping.
That's the one thing. The other thing is, over the weekend, I got to see a film called Like Crazy, which is opening over the next couple weeks, and it won a bunch of big prizes at Sundance. And it's essentially a love story about people who meet and then they're separated by distance, and a bunch of complications ensue. And it's a very, very emotional movie. I cried, and I was... it was referred to by one person who was there as sort of group therapy. And what I love about it is the movie is really, really simple. It's really simply made. You get the impression it could have been made for about $10. I'm sure it wasn't, but it is a terrific, terrific movie. And I'm always happy to be reminded that I can still go to a movie and have it be really, really stirring on a purely emotional level with very little sort of, you know, big active stimuli in the film. It's just incredibly stirring and moving. And again, it's called Like Crazy, and it'll be opening over the next couple weeks. And you will certainly hear about it, because as I said, it won a bunch of big prizes, and I'm sure it will continue to win more. So that is the other thing making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. thanks to everybody for being here.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can, of course, follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, Trey with an E. Graham, like, I don't know.
Oh, I got nothing this week.
Alexander Graham Bell.
There we go.
You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our absolutely non-kicky music that you are listening to right now. Thanks to all of you for being here. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. Find us on the blog. Chat with us. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us what you're going to be for Halloween. And then we will see you back here. Well, I will not see you back here next week because I'll be on vacation. But everybody else will see you right back here next week.